Did you know that the Earth has had 5 extinction events since the existence of our planet? And it's not if another one will happen, but when. Is it now? Is it the beginning of the 6th? Well, today we're going to talk with director Andrew Thompson about his Amazon Prime documentary, The Next Great Extinction Event. And he will explain how we are in the beginnings of the next one. Is it an asteroid? A supervolcano? Climate change? Well, we're going to find out today. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios for the first time, the one and only Andrew Thompson.
Hello.
Here he is. Welcome, Andrew. Well, thank you for being here. I really appreciate it. This is going to be a great show, but it could be a little scary for some people.
could be.
Yeah. So, and I hope it does wake some people up because, you know, it's, I think a lot of people forget about what our past has already occurred. And sometimes we forget some of the very tragic accidents and natural disasters that have happened on this planet. So, well, first of all, again, you're calling in from Australia, and you did, I mean, you've been, it looks, I've went through your bio of things that you've done, and the list is very long, kind of varies on different type of documentaries and films. And I wanted to, first of all, before we get into the actual documentary you put together, The Next Great Extinction Event, wanted to see how you went from kind of filming, it looks like, television shows and all kinds of different shows to what you are filming today. What was that transition?
Well, I started at the tender age of 17 in television and as a graphic artist originally.
Oh, wow. And, okay.
Worked my way up through into production, directing, editing, producing, writing over the last 40 odd years. Probably 15 years ago, I set up my own company because I wanted to do things that I was interested in,
right?
Not just what other people wanted to pay me for. So I financed myself and I started looking around at topics that interested me. In particular, environment, science, technology, space research, exploration.
Right.
Just all those facets of life, which I find interesting. So that's how I got into it. And this group of documentaries that I made under the title of Unearthed, there's 6 titles: Life Beyond Earth, The Next Great Extinction Event, another one called AI, The Code for Consciousness, and several others, including, you know, nuclear power.
Right.
Looking at all the different facets of what's coming up, basically, for us.
Well, let's start in with the one that what really stood out to me, and then we'll talk about some of these other documentaries you put together and films you put together. The Next Great Extinction Event. Some people may not know that we've had 5 that we, at least that we know of. I mean, there could be more, who knows? Maybe you know more than I do since you put the film together. But can you explain the 5 that happened before and then when? Sure. When is the 6th and is it happening now? So let's start there.
Right. Well, we'll start back at the first. This is all recorded in our history of fossils and geological time. And we're going way back to, I have to check my notes for my date.
That's okay.
443 million years ago, there was the first great extinction event. And it was a huge cold snap. This is before life had emerged from the oceans onto land. So there was a period of probably 50 to 100 million years of ice age. The oceans changed, the chemistry changed. Early life in the oceans, you know, started mixing it up, as they say. And eventually it did move to land. The ice age receded. The oxygen levels in the air changed. All these things over millions and millions of years occurred. And then life began on this, on the land, trees, the grasses, and they caused the problem themselves because they would, their roots would go into the soil and that would run off into the oceans and create algae blooms. And that would upset the chemistry again. And the second one, the Late Devonian, was 355 million years ago. So through time, with major changes in environment, like suddenly growing trees, changes the balance and the Earth has to adapt. It has to readjust the levels, like oxygen levels on Earth have gone from 30% down to 10% over these periods. And many animals become extinct. They can't survive in those changing environments.
I mean, and we're talking, like you said, you know, 300 million some years ago. I mean, I guess in our day and age, that's a long time ago, but in the universal time, it's still not that long ago.
No, it's not. But it took a long time for the Earth when it first developed. You know, it's like 4.3 billion years old.
Right.
So, you know, life didn't occur here until very late in its age. And so it's been speeding up. And these natural occurring events have happened over many millions of years. The problem now is that, you know, climate change is a normal function of the mechanism of the planet. But what's happened now is we're taking things that take 10 million years, we're doing them in 20 years.
Wow.
We're changing the atmosphere so quickly and changing the chemistry of the ocean so quickly that all the species here just can't cope with it. So changing so rapidly. That's why we're losing so many species right at the moment.
Well, I mean, I was thinking about in our lifetime, since we, you know, I think you said you're early 60s, I'm early 50s. In our lifetime, how many species have disappeared? And, you know, last 100 years, there's, I don't know how many species have already become extinct. A lot of these events happened. What was the pre-event happening? How long did it take before a lot of these species were gone? And how many, like when the dinosaurs, it was kind of a asteroid hit and pretty much destroyed their destroyed life as it we know it at that time. Mm-hmm. Quickly, were these events usually gradual that they think, or were some of these fairly quickly?
Very, very. They took a long time.
Okay.
To acidify the ocean, for instance, would take, you know, a couple of million years pumping CO2 into it and bacteria producing methane and things like that. The background from the fossil record, the background extinction rate that normally occurs is like one major animal per 1,000 years.
Oh, wow.
Right? And something eventually would evolve to replace that type of creature in whatever niche it has in the environment. But we've lost tens to hundreds of species in the last 50 years. And we actually don't know how many species are becoming extinct because there's not enough scientists out there looking at all the different animals. You know, in the Amazon, for instance, there's so many plants and animals we still haven't catalogued that have probably gone extinct already, and we don't even know it.
When you put this documentary together, where did you begin? Did you build the? No, I'm not talking about the money part of it, but did you start looking at the people you wanted to be, like such as scientists, who you wanted to be a part of it? Where did you begin?
First of all, I started reading, and I think you know, do research reading. You know, read whatever you can get your hands on, no matter how old it is, because you know, views change, particularly in science. And then you look around and see who's the expert in a particular field, like paleobotany or whatever, and who can I have access to? So, of course, most of all these scientists that I interviewed were here in Australia, purely for the ease and the cost. So I, you know, went to Sydney, interviewed a few scientists at the University of New South Wales, down here in Victoria, at Melbourne University, and at the Melbourne Museum, which has a fantastic catalogue of trilobites and other fascinating fossils and relics from throughout time. And some of the, you know, these scientists, that's their life's work, is studying these creatures and why they died, you know. Why did they disappear? So they're the people you want to talk to.
Yeah, and how many were available and willing to put their two cents in? Because sometimes they don't want to, you know, open the mouths and get in trouble from their bosses or other colleagues.
Most scientists I know love to chat.
They love to talk. Yeah, they don't get to talk too often, right?
They want you to know their opinion based on their facts and their research, and the papers they've written, the books they've written. So yeah, it's very easy. And most of these scientists I interviewed for this and other documentaries are usually the head of their department. You know, so they're the top dog in their field. So, you know, what they say goes.
Right. Yeah, I've seen so many documentaries and talked to many people about the climate change. And, you know, Earth is so fragile as it is. I mean, you're talking about asteroids, super volcanoes, methane gas underneath, I think, the Atlantic. I mean, there's so many different things that could completely destroy our planet as we know it very easily. Going into this particular project, what was your main focus? Was it just climate change, or did you want to kind of give your opinion and scientist opinions of what is happening now?
Primarily, yes. What is happening now isn't as serious as some people say it is. Is it too late to do something about it? You know, the sixth extinction event has already started. You know, we're a few years into it already. You know, we're losing, you know, body plans or, you know, creatures at an amazing rate. And it's going to affect us.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Earth is a pretty unique machine. It'll keep going without us.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
It doesn't
right.
care if humans are here or not. You know, in fact, right. it'd be probably a little bit nicer for all the other animals if we weren't.
Yeah.
So it doesn't care. So it's going to change the environment. You know, it's going to rebalance with the things that we're doing to it. You know, we're just going to have to put up and make dramatic changes in our lives, in our civilization, to maintain some sort of normalcy. You know, it's you know, with the waters rising from not just the melting caps, ice caps, but from the temperature of the ocean as it rises, it expands.
Right.
And that's where most of the water level will rise. And of course, it'll affect all the deltas and the cereal growing regions of the world. And so, you know, with our massive overpopulation, right. we're going to suddenly discover we've lost half our food supply. And then, you know, our freshwater supply is the next thing to worry about. Let alone, you know, how big your house is, or if you want a new car or a Rolex watch, you're going to be worrying about where your next meal is going to come from. So, you know, it's that serious a situation. And, you know, politicians at the moment, you know, they have all sorts of talk fests and try and say, oh, we'll keep the temperature down to 1.5 degrees by 2050. That's way too little, too late. You know, we're just slowly tapping the brakes on that car that's heading straight for the cliff. You know, we need dramatic change if we're going to, you know, have some sort of semblance of normalcy in the future.
So, I mean, to a lot of people, when you hear that, And I remember asking a friend of mine several years ago. He was in his, well, he's still alive, and he's getting close to 80 now. And I was like, man, you know, I couldn't imagine in 2050, you know, how the climate, you know, if you believe it's human or natural, whatever, we'll get into that. But I said, you know what, and this kind of shows you where a lot of the older generation are at. I said, I couldn't even imagine what it's going to be like. And he goes, am I going to be alive in 2050? And I said, probably not. And he says, then what do I care? And so I was like, wow. I mean, if you get it over a certain age of generation, who actually has the most wealth, the most power, you know, and they don't care, what do you say to that? And how do people even, how do we even begin to help fix this earth so we can sustain our life on it?
That's a $50 million question,
right,
I think.
Right.
I'm going to plug a movie, Don't Look Up.
Oh, I watched it. It was so good.
Brilliant. And it just it gets to the heart of the matter. You know, if there's money to be made somewhere, somehow,
right,
someone will try and make money on it.
Right.
Whether it, you know, causes the end of the earth or of our civilization anyway, they don't really care. You know, as long as they can make a buck out of it, it's okay by them.
Yeah.
So, it's a collective problem, and together we all have to do it together to solve it.
Yeah. Do you think, and I know this is where a lot of people are having the conflict, do you think the people that say, oh, it's climate change because due to men or women, humans that, you know, pollute the earth. And then you have other people saying, okay, there might be climate change, but it's mostly just for natural, you know, climate change. So if it's just natural, we can't really do anything about it. So why should we put energy, money, and effort into it? How do you solve that problem? Or how do you even prove that it is humans or not humans, or is it a little of both?
It's a little bit of, you know, it's the natural evolution of the planet. There is climate change for a number of reasons.
Right.
But over the time scales, we're talking of tens and hundreds of millions of years. What we're doing to it is we're speeding it up so quickly, you know, going from, you know, 100,000 years to 50 years or whatever, you know. It's astounding how much O2 and methane we're pumping into the atmosphere, how much plastic is in the ocean.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, scientists are talking about a new geological epoch called the Anthropocene, which is defined by, you know, the rock layers. And our latest one has a nuclear spike in it from nuclear weapons testing. And that's the beginning of this new time period. But also in that is a very thin layer of plastic in the rock record. From all the plastic that's been pulverized in the oceans and it's settling in the sediment.
Wow.
And as the, you know, as it evolves, you know, we come back from the future and look at the rock record, and we'll say, oh, I wonder what happened here. There's, you know, a spike in radiation and all this plastic, you know, and that's our fault. Nobody else's.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even Fukushima with the because of the earthquake and, you know, the nuclear power plant that is, I guess, is still polluting the ocean as we speak. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, it's just going to get in the ocean and dilute. And I've talked to many people and they're like, no, it does not. It is not.
It'll concentrate in the fish.
Right.
The fish will die and it'll sink to the bottom and it will be there, you know, for a very long time.
Well, doing this film and you interviewing all these people, what scared you the most? Because, you know, it's almost like interviewing a serial killer. You think it might be interesting to talk to these people, but when you start looking into their eyes and hearing their stories and the lack of empathy and all this and sympathy, you start getting a little nervous. But talking to a lot of scientists, what was something that really scared you of doing this film?
Realizing that it's a chain reaction, like, for instance, Greenland, the ice is melting.
Right.
Right. And ice melts at a certain rate because of the sun shining on it. But as it gets lower in altitude, the air gets warmer. So that speeds it up a little bit. And then you get to the dirty ice underneath, and that's darker. That absorbs more heat. That moves it faster.
Hmm.
And, you know, these scientists I interviewed 1-2 years ago, their predictions have now been superseded. And things are moving faster and faster than they even predicted. And so we'll have no ice cap over Greenland very shortly, because it's accelerating in the speed that it's just vanishing, pouring into the oceans and doing all the things that it does. It's that scary because we can't stop these reactions.
Right.
You know, once they start, there's a tipping point you reach, and then it's overboard, and that's done it. Yep.
But what did they say that we could do? I mean, like you said, we really can't stop any of this happening because you say there is a natural climate change, but we just accelerated it. I mean, even if we slowed down from 200 miles an hour to 150, that's still going 150 miles an hour.
Right.
I mean, how do we even slow it down, and what do we prepare for? What did they say? You know, this is not gonna save our planet in some ways. We might be able to inhabit this planet, but how is it gonna change our evolution to survive to live here?
Mm. That's a very good question. I mean, you're seeing now because there's more energy, heat, thermal energy in the atmosphere, for instance, you're going to get more severe storms. Hmm. And we're all seeing.
Oh, we're seeing that now, yeah.
You know, all the time they're getting bigger and bigger and more powerful, more dangerous. And, you know, they're going to destroy towns, cities. The water's going to rise. I mean, it's all gloom and doom, but, you know, if we stopped today, all carbon emissions, right, stop at zero, there's still going to be change.
Yeah.
You know, we've already tipped over a lot of the tipping points. One that really worries me is in the oceans. There's, you know, undersea currents that go down the Pacific,
right,
from down the United States,
right,
you know, right down through there. Their thermal differences. We have little rivers inside the ocean of different temperature and salinity levels. And that brings nutrients around,
right,
feeds the fish, keeps everyone happy. At a certain point, that could stop. The river could stop moving, and therefore there'll be no more food for the fish.
Oh, my God.
And that's a very dangerous tipping point. And you're going to see all sorts of catastrophes in the oceans from that. So... yeah.
Did you ever see the movie The Day After Tomorrow?
Yes.
That, honestly, when I watched that movie at the time, I was like, man, that is so far-fetched. But now I'm like, what happened? The currents actually reversed, I think, or stopped. I can't remember which one. And they started having these supercell, which I'm starting to hear that now, like, oh, it's a supercell, like this huge winter storm here in America is going to affect up to 50 million people. Does the scientist say that we may have to move, like in the movie? Remember how everybody, they said, above this line is not going to survive, and everybody... this line has to move south. Is that something that we may have to do? Is like pretty much just, you know.
I don't think it'd be feasible to move that many people. I think you'd have to face the fact you're going to have to reduce cull the population to survive. It's a very sad thing to say, but, you know, we are overpopulated with humans.
Right.
We consume more than the planet can produce, 1.5 times as much as the planet has, we consume. on a regular basis. You know, we're fishing the oceans dry, you know, running out of fish.
Right.
You know, it's our fault. And we're going to face the consequences of it. Sooner rather than later.
What was the reaction of other scientists that maybe watched your documentary, and what was the reaction of, you know, executives that watched it, of these movie studios and people that watched it once it was on Amazon Prime? What was your biggest reaction towards your documentary?
One in particular, I made another documentary on nuclear power shortly after I'd finished Extinction. And I met a scientist in Adelaide. He was from Canada originally, I think, but he's a senior professor in Adelaide, at Adelaide University. And he saw it and loved it. And in fact, expanded on, he's a very pro-nuclear lobbyist, virtually, right. With, you know, fourth generation modular nuclear units. And he says, you know, we should be sticking them in the ground everywhere and shutting down carbon production. In Australia, we have so much coal, it's ridiculous, and we still burn it.
Wow.
And all our power generators. And we have a huge supply of uranium. And these new nuclear modular nuclear reactors, you know, you load it up, you build it in a factory, then you stick it in the ground and it runs for 40 years. No need to refuel it. You know, like a submarine's nuclear reactor. They're perfect. We can build them now. We can get them running now. But, you know, a lot of people choose not to. As soon as you say the N word, people don't like nuclear.
It's
unfortunate.
Yeah, and, you know, I know California has some nuclear power plants. I grew up in Kansas where they have a nuclear power plant. I mean, if something does go wrong, like Chernobyl, I mean, it does, you know, it can't. Yeah.
They're the old.
That's
design.
the old version. Yeah.
We have so much better engineering now for these devices. You don't need to build a huge, massive thing. You know, they can be small. You need more power, you build another one, put it next to it, you know, like batteries.
Right.
And you put them where you need them. You put them next to your smelters or your heavy industry. You don't have to have them central, you know. So it's a tool in the toolbox that we could use to help with the climate change.
Yeah, and I remember you said something about, you know, about food, but, you know, we can survive on, you know, we don't need meat. I mean, we can eat other things, but we can't live without water.
That's right.
That's one thing that we definitely can't live without. And I've been told by many people, psychics, other people, you know, in this industry, saying that our wars are going to be over rights of water. I remember I saw an article about, you know, California is going through this biggest drought they've ever seen, even though we had some good rain the other day. It'd have to rain pretty much for 3 months solid just to fill the reservoirs back. But now, you know, the Colorado River, you know, it supplies water for, you know, a lot of different states. And now they're starting to sue each other of who does have the rights to use the water. So I have a feeling we're not too far off of something like that happening.
We're in Australia, we're very familiar with drought.
You're that huge fire that you guys had.
So we fight over water all the time. We only have one major river system between New South Wales and Victoria, and everyone's dipping into it. And some silly person thought, well, let's grow cotton and rice down here, which is huge amounts of water required.
Yeah, I know cotton, definitely. I know that was, it pretty much depletes your.
Yeah, so that's silly. We should be adapting to, you know, low water crops and things like that, just simple things. But someone's making money out of it. So, you know, that's the first barrier you have to clear.
Right,
Is
right.
stop thinking about making money.
Well, let's talk about what is next. Let's say that our Earth becomes to a point where it's really hard to live on. I know you have life beyond Earth and other. Yeah. I know you love space. What do you think the next phase of having an out? Do you think have you heard about anything such as that, of trying to live on other planet or the moon?
Oh, well, you know, there's Mr. Elon Musk and his grand plans.
Right.
Best of luck to him. He seems to have managed to do a few things that no one else could. You know, he can, from a little startup company, he's doing better than Boeing.
Right.
With their billions of dollars, he's be able to create, you know, reusable rockets, put tourists into orbit. You know, he's preparing to land on the moon in the next 2 or 3 years, and his aim is Mars. You know, there's a lot of possibilities with Mars, colonizing it, perhaps in the long term terraforming it, but we might have to start looking further afield. To exoplanets. There's a lot of them out there, and some of them might be useful for us. So it's a matter of developing our technology to be able to get there. That's the huge hurdle. The distances and the time required is massive.
Well, before we go on to the next subject, we do have one question, and she says, I'm sorry, I'm a little late, but may I ask if Andrew has stated when the Earth comes into extinction, please. So for the people, because thank you, everybody. This is actually, I have to say, one of our biggest live audience shows we've had. So thank you guys for tuning in. I think a lot of people see that title and they, you know, they see a lot of things happening around them that they want to know what's going on. So so could you kind of restate when the Earth comes into extinction?
The Earth itself won't become extinct.
Well, not the Earth. Yeah, the Earth.
Humans, possibly. But we're talking, we're very adaptive. You know, we are pretty smart animals. We've dominated the planet for, you know, 20, 30,000 years. I can't give you a specific date, but we are now currently in the sixth great extinction event. It could include us, but, you know, I think we'll adapt in one way or another. It won't be life as we know it. I think we'll be, you know, just really taking it day by day until we can come up with some better technology to help us produce food, water, accommodation, livelihoods for people. You know, we've got to stop, you know, digging everything up and then throwing it away.
Right.
So sorry, I can't answer the question specifically, but you know, it could be thousands of years. I don't know.
Well, we have another question, and I think I can answer, but I'll let you answer it. King of Huco Mundo, what is making the COVID spike up again? Well, real quick, I think as we start seeing a lot of these storms, water rising and stuff, I think there's going to be a lot more diseases. We're going to see a lot more diseases hit the earth. And do you agree with that?
Yeah, mutation is a part of life. Everything mutates eventually, either for good or for bad. Most mutations die out because they're not viable. Some do, like COVID-19, the coronavirus. Well, there's many, many types of coronavirus, but COVID-19 in particular is going through these variations. Omicron is far more infectious, but it appears at this point to be less lethal. It, don't forget that in the virus's interest not to kill the host.
Yeah.
That's how it populates. It, you know, it wants to make you sick, make you spread viruses by coughing, sneezing, sweating,
right,
all those things. so it dominates the world. Get vaccinated. That's the answer to that one.
All right, well, let's move on. I know you have some other amazing documentaries. Could you talk about Unearthed? I'd really like to hear what that documentary is about. And I think it was a series also, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's Unearthed is the it was meant to be 8 episodes, but I ran out of money and time. So it's actually 6 episodes. Life Beyond Earth is the first episode. The second one's the next great extinction event. The third one is, I can't remember the order of it, Nuclear 2.0, then one on artificial intelligence and robotics, which is itself a fascinating subject. It's, people would be amazed how unadvanced we are in robotics. They still can't make them walk and talk at the same time. unfortunately, it looks good in the movies, but in reality, it's not so good. There's another documentary I have called Amber, and it follows the story of a paleontologist from Monash University, who discovered a little bit of mammal tail in a piece of amber, right? So it's 150 million years old and probably the first example of mammalian fur and hair in it. It's just a fantastic story about how they researched it and they used lasers on it and electron microscopes and cyclotrons and all sorts of equipment to look at this piece of animal, which was, you know, like 1 centimeter in size, living during the dinosaur times. And it was apparently eaten while it was alive, and the tail fur was pulled off from the rest of the body,
right,
into the tree resin. And, you know, many millions of years later, we find it and we can study this new species of animal, which is now extinct, of course.
That's amazing.
Yeah, there's some really interesting tales, excuse the pun, about that little animal. And there's another one I did was, I was trying to finance one on fusion power, which is the next step beyond nuclear. Fusion power is a fascinating subject. They're making huge breakthroughs right at the moment in Europe and China, US as well. Developing fusion power, which is harnessing the power of the sun to, you know, generate electricity with supposedly zero waste.
Wow. I mean, they kind of do that now with solar panels and stuff like that?
Totally different concept, but solar panels have problems of their own. What do you do with them when you want to dispose of them? They've got some nasty chemicals in them.
Right.
You don't have to
right.
recycle. That's another documentary again.
So what has been one of the documentaries you've put together so far that made the biggest impact on you?
On me, Life Beyond Earth. I originally made it as 2 1-hours. 1 hour on looking at the solar system, looking at Mars and the ice moons around Jupiter and Saturn, where there's most likely to be life. And the second half was about exoplanets and the odds of one having life on some of these exoplanets and then, you know, advanced life. It's fascinating to see how hit and miss, you know, it took 5 extinction events to get us. If the asteroid hadn't hit and killed the dinosaurs,
we wouldn't be here.
We wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
We'd be, you know, snacks at the dinosaur canteen. You know, it's just the way things are. So for that to happen on another planet in the same sequence, you know, the odds are pretty astronomical.
I was watching the Marvel movie, The Eternals. I haven't finished it yet, but there was one line that stood out to me where the main being that sent the Eternals to Earth to protect them from a particular creatures And then he said, at present day, he said, it's time. And they're like, what does that mean? And then they got a vision of the earth being destroyed so that a new life could be evolve. And mm-hmm. he says, you know, I know it sounds kind of evil, but sometimes that's what has to happen is, you know, one species has to die mm-hmm. for another one to be born. Exactly. And I mean, I guess as humans, you know, I have to say many of us live in fear every day of, you know, paying the bills and going, you know, feeding our family and having the best car to drive and all this stuff. So I think humans do live in fear a lot. But do you feel that, you know, we humans were meant to be here for a short time?
Well, we've only been here for, you know, at best 60,000 years. We've only been have a technology for 200 years.
Right. So right.
That's a flash in the pan.
Yeah. That's
compared
nothing
to the age of the planet. So, you know, if we were to suddenly go bang and disappear, who knows what would evolve yeah. after us, leaving that niche open. It's like one of the scientists told me about dolphins. Dolphins are probably more intelligent than humans. They have a larger brain, more right. complex brain. Their only problem is that they can't make fire. If they could make fire and smelt metals, then they could build a technology and then, you know, build rockets. But right. because they're in the ocean, they're stuck in their environment, they can't do any of that. So, you know, maybe if we go, they might come, you know, come back to land, because they were a land animal once, and
right,
back to
right.
the ocean. Maybe they'll come back out and take over.
I mean, that would be, wouldn't that be nice to have a time machine to go, you know, a couple, 3,000 or 4,000 years from now and just to see where we're at. But, we have about 7 minutes left, but we have to, I mean, this is truth be told. We have to ask that question as, you know, everything that you touch on, you know, is, it really is in the paranormal world because, you know, you're dealing with the unknown, space and, you know, future and all, and pretty much anything that you touch when it comes to your documentaries, you know, there's a lot of questions to be asked and answered. But what's your thoughts on like this life beyond Earth, your take on extraterrestrials? And do you think Earth is being visited by otherworldly beings?
I'll qualify this answer. I personally believe that we are not being visited by alien intelligences from other planets for a number of reasons. It's not just space and distance, it's time.
Right.
You know, we've only been here for, you know, a couple of thousand years. It doesn't mean it's going to coordinate with another planet 50 million light years away. There might be life there and they will evolve into a civilization eventually, but not today. You know, maybe in a few thousand years, or maybe a few thousand years ago, they went extinct.
Right.
So, you know, coordinating the time, then moving the distance. Why would you bother to come to another planet? The effort required, you know, it'd be like the moonshot in the 1960s. It took so much of America, the industry and the money and the time and the effort and the science just to get to the moon. So thinking if you're going to go see another planet, you're not going to announce your arrival. I mean, you spent so much effort to get there. And besides, H.G. Wells was correct. You know, if a creature from another environment, from another world, steps out onto Earth, they're going to be dead in 3 or 4 minutes after the viruses and bacteria attack them, which they have no defense against. You know, they just, their bodies won't know what hit them. So it's like the Mars missions. We send robots to Mars. We take special care that they're sterilized. We don't want to introduce bugs from Earth
right.
to Mars. And that's another reason we only look for extinct life on Mars. We're not looking for living life, like microbes and things, because we would contaminate them and kill them.
Yeah, that is
so
true.
So, you know, it defeats the purpose of that scientific experiment.
And I think, you know, I mean, I my personal belief, I believe they're out there, but hey, this is, that's why we're human beings. So we can actually have a great conversations and, agree and disagree on things. But, but, I love that answer. I love that answer. 'Cause I do agree that, you know, taking diseases to, I mean, example, Native Americans lived here in the North America when the Europeans came over, they brought the smallpox and chickenpox and da da da, and pretty much wiped out everybody that was here. So yeah, I mean, it is true that that is possible. But
and
I have
the same planet.
Yeah, right, right. And we're on the same planet. But I have to say, why would they continue to come back here? Well, I mean, I've been to Cancun many times. The first couple times, I was pretty excited. After that, I was like, "Yeah, it's fun." I wasn't excited the few times after that, but you know, I agree with you that there are a lot of things with extraterrestrials that you wonder that if they can catch our viruses and stuff, or unless they have an immune system that is just out of this world.
They also offer an alternative. It's more likely, I would think, that if we're being visited by intelligences, pardon me, they're more likely to come from another dimension or from a time, not necessarily from, you know, another planet.
Right.
You know, a great distance away, which, you know, hasn't evolved brains yet. So, you know, maybe it's, you know, future Earthlings coming back to study us like fossils. Who knows? And you know, there's multiple dimensions as well. So.
Oh yeah.
Maybe they found a way to get around it. You never the science.
I guess hopefully in our lifetime we'll get some of the answers that we've been asking for thousands of years. All right. Well, Andrew, so tell us any new projects coming out that you'd like to tell us about, what to look forward to.
Yes, I'm nearly finished editing Moon Men, which is 5 one-hour episodes about the history of people who came up with the ideas to get us to the moon, going way back to the 15th century. The scientists and the philosophers and the science fiction writers who came up with the ideas of using rockets and parachutes and all the things we needed to get to the moon. And I'm also doing one called Pazuzu, the King of the Ancient Demons.
Oh, wow.
Which is a fascinating one-hour documentary, it will be, about Pazuzu, who featured heavily in The Exorcist, if everyone cares to remember that movie.
I do.
And we're looking at the science of it. And did it actually exist? Which is one of the questions we're going to try and answer.
Well, definitely that one, when it comes out, we'd love to have you back.
Sure.
I would love to. I mean, both of them sound great, but that one really stood out to me. I love that stuff, mm-hmm. too. Well, everybody can go to astromedia.com.au, and you can look at tons of different documentary trailers that and stuff that's in pre-production and in development. And we thank you so much for taking the time on Saturday morning in Australia. Now you can go watch your cartoons.
No.
But everybody that tuned in, again, thank you guys so much. We really appreciate you asking questions, leaving comments, and being a part of Truth Be Told. Make sure you tune in every Monday for Robert Hensley. He does the Minuteman Report for Truth Be Told. On Wednesday, we have Bonnie Burkett. She was in the chat room today, so make sure you tune in for Truth Be Told Transformation. And then, of course, me every Friday right here at 3 o'clock. And, but until next time, guys, thank you for supporting us and liking and sharing our show and leaving comments. It's always helpful. All right, until next time, take care. Bye. This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California. Join us on social media. Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio. Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows.